some of my songs I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Yes, back on Downtown. It's time for Shut Up and Eats. We're joined by Joe Riccio of Food Coma. Hello there, Joe.
Hi, that's a very old-timey, fun selection there.
The great Tom T. Hall celebrating his love of beer.
Yeah, I mean, why not? It's easygoing, fun, sometimes mellow experience.
Indeed. And so we're going to talk about domestic beer today. But what's been going on since last we chatted, Joe? What have you been up to?
We've been booking Food Coma parties like crazy. I'm going to see Tool on Monday in Manchester.
Oh, nice.
And apparently I have tickets for the drummer, Danny Carey, is friends with my friends. And so we have, like, friends and family passes. So,
Ooh. Yeah,
apparently it's going to be quite an experience. I've never seen Tool before, but I love them. So I'm excited about that.
Well, that's pretty cool. Well, we're going to talk beer, specifically domestic beer. So where do we begin?
Yeah, I felt that was just like a fun topic because, I mean, personally, I kind of grew up on the self-proclaimed king of beers, which is the Budweiser, the famous Budweiser beer, which produces the smoothest and drinkability like no other beer you'll find at any other price, I believe, in terms of what the Clydesdale says. I don't know.
Who am I to argue with a Clydesdale? But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I had my share of it back in the day, and I would say that of all of the domestic, the mass-produced beers out there, they're still the king.
I mean, kind of. Like, you know, I kind of recently, I gave up wine a couple months ago.
Ooh.
And I've been sort of on a beer kick, a very light beer kick. Because it just doesn't basically do much to me. It kind of fools me into the fact that I'm kind of drinking, but I don't actually feel like I am. And I certainly don't get that hungover from it.
I'm trying to think of other beers. Now, when I was a kid, I just remember that the older men in the family, my granddad used to love Schlitz.
Okay, yeah, Schlitz. All those beers kind of made a comeback, didn't they? Like,
It's
like every bar now, like every kind of trendy bar, they want to have like the one beer they think that they're the only ones that bring back, whether it be like Coors Banquet beer, Schlitz, Hams.
Miller High Life.
High Life, yeah, that's been like a little bit now. PBR and High Life kind of had their heyday already. Schaefer, the beer to have when you have more than one.
Well, and if you're going to have Schaefer, then I want some Narragansett there too.
Yeah, Gansett is delicious. Schaefer, though, I like that their case is called the Weekender. That's just like, and actually, it's funny. I'm going to a party tonight where apparently they got, it's a birthday party, and they got the guy, I guess PBR makes 99 packs.
Oh, my Lord.
And they weigh like 1 million pounds, and they're, I don't know, like $100 or something. I don't know. But I'm going to go. That was what made me want to talk about this today, because I'm going to go experience that later.
No, I do. I miss some of the beers that were around when I was younger that I don't think exist anymore. Do you remember the old Peel's wide mouth bottles?
No, I think that might have been before my time.
They were pretty good.
Like wide mouth bottles. I mean, like, obviously that got adapted by Budweiser and all them later on.
And then Rheingold, which was around back in the day.
Wow, you're really, I have no idea about any of those. I remember the best deal when I was in high school was a case of Busch Bar bottles.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was like 24 for like $11.99 or something like that.
I remember when they first started making Busch and that whole, they had old Hoyt Axton on the ad campaign, Head for the Mountains.
Head for the Mountains, Head for the Mountains of Busch.
Yeah.
And then Coors kind of co-opted that with their labels that turn blue, I guess. Like, they're cold, like, as if you don't have any feeling in your hand. You can't touch the bottle. You need the label to tell you how cold it is. I don't know.
And then there were always those knockoff beers, too. Like, was it Milwaukee's Best?
Well, yeah, Milwaukee's Beast, we used to call it. but there was Milwaukee's Beast. There was MGD.
Right.
But then the one that I don't really see anymore was Old Milwaukee, which actually I thought was a very good beer.
I remember you enjoying that. And then there was a PBR knockoff, I think, called Red, White, and Blue.
Well, that doesn't surprise. Well, there was also, if you live in the Midwest, well, there are two beers that when I lived in Chicago that you can't. Well, there's Old Style.
Oh, yeah.
And then also another beer that you can't get here that I liked, there was Stroh's.
Stroh's pretty good. I've had that.
Fire brewed in Detroit.
Yeah.
It was really good, right?
Yeah, well, I thought it was pretty good.
The first one to have 8-packs rather than 6-packs.
And I know when people travel that way. I know folks who can't wait to get themselves a Yingling.
Oh, yeah. And Yingling is now showing up here, I think, in Maine. And Yingling is good. It's like all these like domestic pilsners, like they have like, there's just something slightly different about each one. They're all kind of similar. But I love with like domestic beer, like all the different fads. Like one of my favorite fads back in the day was ice beer.
Oh, God, yes. I forgot about that.
Yeah. Ice beer. Remember, it was like basically 5.5 to 6% alcohol instead of 4.5. But they always had fun bottles. Like the Bud Ice had like the crystallized bottle. I mean, Molson Ice isn't domestic, but, you know, I kind of count that in the same category. It was one of my favorites in Labatt's Ice also. But everybody had an ice beer. Unfortunately, Natty Light had their ice beer as well.
Well, and that was that whole trend, which has probably become, in many cases, bigger than the originals, and that's the whole light beer trend.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, well, it was a great taste, less filling.
Right,
right. Miller Lite anthem. But yeah, they all have like, yeah, everybody has a light version. I mean, I like Corona Light personally because it's only 99 calories and they're basically like drinking water. But I mean, light beer, but also remember Bud Dry?
I do remember Bud
Dry. What was the deal with Bud Dry?
I remember it, but I don't remember what was supposed to make it special.
I don't remember what was dry about it. Like, why was it? I mean, it seemed pretty wet to me. I don't understand.
Right. I don't know what they were trying to do with that.
All those things. Like I said, I think that, like, I enjoy just, with domestic beer just throughout probably like the 90s, you know, in the last, you know, probably 25 years, just the random things they try to kind of latch on to. I remember, like, Miller Red.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Was actually a pretty, usually the ones that I like go away.
And I used to like, and I can't remember, was it Coors that made it? I used to like Killian's Red.
Oh, Killian's Red was delicious. Killian's Red was one of the first beers that I was like, this is, because that was that Irish or was it made here?
No, it was made, I think it was made out west. I think.
I was always, because remember like back in the day, like now everybody's like microbrews, blah, blah, blah. But they used to be basically, it was like there were two categories. There was like domestic and then there was imported beers.
Right.
And imported beers were always like the fancy beers, like Löwenbräu and Guinness and Sam Smith's or whatever. But yeah, Killian's Red was, I would actually like to try one of those like now and see if I still like it as much.
Now, let's see. I'm reading about the Irish Red here. Okay, it was brewed by Coors.
Oh, okay. So it was just an Irish-style Red by Coors, yeah.
I guess, yeah. Based on a recipe from Ireland. Okay, that makes sense. But I don't think it was actually made here. Oh, by the way, I found some information on Bud Dry.
Oh, yeah, what do you got?
It was introduced in the United States April of 1990 with the slogan of, "Why ask why? Try Bud Dry."
Nothing beats the Bud, man.
It was using Anheuser-Busch's dry brew process. I don't know what the hell that means. They stopped marketing it when they rolled out Bud Ice in 1994.
Yes, because ice is the opposite of
Right.
It can't be, this should go on Bud Dry Ice.
Oh. With steam coming out of it.
Market that. That was back in the days of Ice House and Red Dog.
Oh, oh my. What's the appeal of these domestic beers, though? Is it simply their drinkability and the fact that, you know, you can have them and you don't feel anything?
Well, it's the crushability and it's the price. And I think that, you know, I mean, there are many of them. I mean, I remember, like, going to the liquor store in my neighborhood growing up. They served, they had the Jenny Cream Ale.
Oh, I used to like that a lot.
Yeah, Jenny Cream Ale, you could get, it was like Lucy's. You get them in like, you put them in a plastic bag. And they were like, you get like six of them for like $2.50 or something like that. I don't know. I think it's just like the tradition, the quantity. It's like when you talk about being outside, like just the kind of beers, you know, even Budweiser is based on, you know, Czech, it was Budvar and like, and that was called Czech Var, but they basically like stole the recipe from them, I think. I mean, they're all based on like a very European European Pilsner style. But
oh, I forgot this one. I used to have in college, the Green Death, as we used to call it, Heffenreffer.
Oh, Heffenreffer. Well, Heffenreffer made the 64 ounce, not even the 40s. I mean, I used to drink a lot of Colt 45 back in the day, but Heffenreffer had the 64 ounce.
Right. Private stock, like it was really special.
Private stock, exactly. and like, we talk about the dreaded, for radio, we'll call it the butt of the 40, when you get to the end of it, and it's just like gag reflex.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You want to talk about a 64-ounce, like, oh, it was brutal. Yeah, those things were rugged. And honestly, what's the difference between malt liquor and beer besides the... alcohol content, like
I think that's about it. And I remember, what was the other one? It was Colt 45. There were a couple
St.
others.
Ives.
Oh yes, yes,
yeah. St. Ives and Colt 45 and Crazy Horse were the ones back in the day. Crazy Horse, obviously, being a bit of an appropriated brand now, so I don't, that wouldn't be around anymore. But Colt 45 was definitely the king of malt liquor, and Billy D. Williams obviously repping it. Saying it works every time.
Why do I think maybe Billy D wasn't really drinking the Colt 45? I might be wrong.
But that commercial was amazing.
Oh, it was.
Because party, wearing a tuxedo, right. Drinking a pounder can of Colt 45.
That's Lando Calrissian drinking a Colt 45. Sign me up, kids.
Well, Lando probably drank a lot of Colt 45 when he made the deal with Darth Vader to get Han Solo... incarcerated, they can freeze them in carbon.
Right, that's the problem. Yeah, that Colt 45, his judgment was, it was...
Or Bud Dry, now that I think about it.
Oh, man. But now maybe it's just memory, because I was young, I didn't know any better, and I'm a craft beer snob now, I rarely will have a domestic beer, but it seemed like back in the day, those beers went pretty well with a lot of different foods, too.
Well, yeah, because it was basically like drinking water. It was like, they have to be cold to go with food. I mean,
right.
Drink them warm sometimes, inevitably, because whatever. But, yeah, they just, like, they're the kind of beers that if you're actually thirsty, like, you're not going to drink a craft beer if you're thirsty, per se. It's not going to, like, quench your thirst.
No.
But if you, like, slug a Coors Light that's ice cold when you're actually thirsty, like, it'll actually quench your thirst.
I hope I don't have to try that sometime. I had one of those a couple of years ago, and my word, there was nothing. There was no flavor there.
No, I mean, there's no flavor. They all taste, let's be honest, they all kind of taste pretty much the same. I mean, there's a lot of brand loyalty with these beers, but, I mean, at the end of the day, it's all kind of the same thing, whether it's from Miller or Bud or, you know, all these families of beers. I'm trying to think. There was one that I feel like I'm leaving one out, and I can't think of what it is.
Well, we had all the Milwaukee Stroh's. Did you ever have that?
Well, we talked about Stroh's earlier.
Well, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
Fire Brewed in Detroit.
Yeah, there was another one.
I guess I like the ones that have a little bit of body. So that's what Old Milwaukee, I felt, was the same way. Yeah, I don't know. I just...
Oh, was it... I remember... Do you remember Red Hook?
Yeah. Well, Red Hook... But Red Hook was considered more of a craft beer.
Yeah.
Like Harpoon or, you know, like the original line of craft beers like Sierra Nevada. Well, Sam Adams... I mean, back in I know what it was, Saranac. They used to have I guess I can say it now because I'm in high school. I mean, whatever. We all drank beer in high school. But, like, there was always, like, the sampler pack you could get of all the different styles. And Sam Adams is the same way. You'd be like, oh, I actually really like things like cherry wheat beer. Or and they had the Boston Ale in addition to the Boston Lager, and they don't make the Boston Ale anymore. I thought the Boston Ale was much better.
Oh, I got a couple for you here. Black Label.
Oh, yes, Black Label. Yeah, I remember Black Label. It was always akin to, like, remember the generic, it's just a beer on
beer,
it?
Beer.
The grocery store, yeah.
And then this one, I vaguely remember in my younger days, Falstaff.
Oh, I don't remember that one.
And Hams with the Hams Bear.
Oh, Hams for sure. I mean, Hams is one of the ones that a lot of these trendy bars try to bring back now. Right now, I'm actually enjoying a Corona, which I think, without a lime, I think Coronas are, I mean, again, it's Mexican, it's not domestic, but it's just like the easiest, most sluggable beer in the world.
Yeah, and I've always felt they had a little bit of flavor to it. There, it wasn't bad.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's just like you don't have to really think about it. And again, it goes back to like what I started with. It's just like it doesn't really do a lot to you. It doesn't, you know, cripple your evening by any stretch of the imagination.
But it'll wash down a burrito better than most.
It certainly will, as well as we're gonna have a whole separate episode about Mexican beers because I have a whole, you know, spectrum of opinions on those.
All right, well, I'll put that down. That's for down the road a little bit. There we go.
Yeah, I mean, somebody told me a long time ago that, like, whether it's with, like, beer or, you know, liquor or whatever, it's important to have brands that you like that you can get everywhere. Like, if you only like a certain specialty beer, or maybe you only like high-end tequila or whatever, like, you're going to be in trouble because you can't just go to any place and get them. But if you like things like Corona and, like, Jameson, for instance, like, you always know that every place you go, you'll be able to get that.
Right, right.
So it's good to develop a taste for those things in addition to the finer things in life.
Sage advice right there, as always, from Joe Riccio. Joe, thank you, as always. What do you got going this weekend? Party tonight?
Not a lot. I'm relaxed. We have such a packed December with dinners. But I'm getting myself ready for the Tool show on Monday, which I'm very excited about.
Excellent. Well, have fun at that. We expect a full report next week.
Oh, yeah. And also, just so you know, we got some Honey Nut Cheerios in the house this week.
Oh, fantastic.
I feel like every episode should include a cereal report now. You know, as far as what we're eating. I mixed some Honey Nut Cheerios this morning with some... almond cinnamon special cakes. I'm all about to mix.
Oh.
And it was wonderful.
And after we did the segment on breakfast cereals, I went home just to make sure I had counted correctly. And I was right. 19 boxes of cereal in the house.
And yeah. I've started watching Seinfeld episodes late at night. And you have way more than he does.
Oh, great. Yep. Well, there we go. That's my story.
That's what it is.
There you go. Yep. Well, Joe, thank you, sir. Have a good weekend and enjoy Tool. Right. And we'll catch you next Friday.
All right, that's good, Rich. Talk to you later.
That is Joe Riccio, Food Coma Podcast. Shut up and eat every Friday here on Downtown.